Good afternoon. The time is about 3 o'clock, and you are tuned to KTOO News. Welcome to a Juno afternoon for Monday, January 6th. My name is Martha Moore, sitting in for Joan Pardis today. Coming up in the next hour, we'll find out about Saturday's tot rave at DIPAC. Kate Pressling will be here to highlight computer classes at the Learning Connection. We'll talk with Heather Beatty, Program Director for the Pick, Click, and Give program. And we'll celebrate National Mentoring Month at That, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, Music, and more. The forecast today is calling for areas of fog, rain mixed with snow, highs around 38.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Tribal lands on the northern plains continue to go through some of the coldest conditions in more than a decade. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports.
Sisseton, South Dakota is located on tribal land of the Sisseton Wahpeton Oyate. That community is one of many where residents woke up to brutal wind chill readings. Temperatures in the 20 below zero range combined with northwest winds to make the morning feel like minus 50 in northeast South Dakota and elsewhere. National Weather Service meteorologist Kelly Sayre says the region has a few more hours of bitter cold ahead, but improvement is on the way.
The wind chill warning will continue because we keep that out as long as wind chills are 35 below zero or colder. And so that continues until tomorrow morning. But we will actually see temperatures tonight as we go into the overnight hours. They'll be pretty steady, maybe even rising a little bit overnight. And then by Tuesday afternoon, the whole state should be above zero, kind of a pretty big change from northeast South Dakota. They'll be in the single digits above zero. And then if you go to the Rapid City area, we're looking at 30s and 40s.
Sarah says much of the nation is under a polar vortex, a low-pressure system pulling extremely cold air from the North Pole into the U.S. She says with the dangerous wind chills, exposed flesh can freeze in minutes. Officials in several states are also telling people to keep tabs on their livestock and pets during the cold weather. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbolt.
Strawberry Island in Wisconsin is a sacred place to the Lac-Da-Flambeau tribe. The island is where the last battle between Sioux and Ojibwe people was fought in the 1700s. It's recognized by the National Register of Historic Places. As Ken Krall with WXPR reports, the tribe fought for its ownership and its purchase was finalized last week.
The island had been in non-native ownership since 1910. A permit for the owner to build on the island was denied by Wisconsin courts in 1996. Since that time, the Lac-Da-Flambeau tribe has been negotiating with the owners to purchase the island. A few weeks ago, the tribe and the owners came to an agreement. The island was reportedly purchased for $250,000. For tribal president Tom Molson, this day was the culmination of years of work, and he was pleased those who passed on who fought to bring the island to tribal ownership were represented by their descendants.
It's good to see the people that were here, a lot of different relatives that belong to those other relatives that passed on, is sort of represented today in this beautiful day.
Molson says the sticking point was money.
The sale was way up in the millions and millions of dollars, and we just were very staunch in saying, hey, no. You know, I mean, we know what you got it for. You got it for less than $200 way back then or whatever the number was, but there's a lot less than what we paid for today.
Items discovered on the island date back as far as 300 B.C. Portions of the island were damaged by a tornado several years ago. For National Native News in Lac-Da-Flambeau, Wisconsin, Ken Krall reporting.
The Chickasaw Nation in Oklahoma has lost its last monolingual Chickasaw language speaker. According to the tribe, Emily Johnson Dickerson was a full-blood Chickasaw who only spoke her native language. The beloved elder was 93 years old when she died last week. Funeral services were held over the weekend. The tribe estimates she was one of about 70 remaining fluent Chickasaw speakers. During this week in 2012, Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley signed two executive orders recognizing Indian status for two groups. The Piscataway Indian Nation and the Piscataway Kanoi Tribe became the first state-recognized tribes in Maryland history. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Every Alaskan can support causes and organizations they care about when they file for a permanent fund dividend. Use PIC-CLIC-GIVE when filing online for your PFD. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And you're tuned to a Juno Afternoon, and I am happy to have in the studio with me our first guests. And they're here to talk about the Tot Rave this Saturday at DIPAC. And I'd like to welcome Shannon Muldoon, Melissa Dumas, and Kevin Dean, also known as DJ White Chocolate in the DJing world. So just go ahead and one of you go ahead and start telling us all about the Tot Rave on Saturday.
Okay, well, it's this Saturday at DIPAC, and it's at 4:30 to 7:30. It's a dance for children under the age of 6. It's our third annual Tot Rave. It's been a lot of fun in the past, and we fill DIPAC all the way up with youth and their parents, because you can't leave your kids without staying, of course. It's $5 per person for children over the age of 3, and we serve food. We have sandwiches and chips and...
Got a silent auction going on.
There's a silent auction where we have a whole bunch of great things that have been donated from people in the community here.
So anyone is invited. Do you have to have a child?
Yes,
you
actually,
do have to have a child.
That is one of our rules. You have to parents have to have children, and children have to have parents.
And the children are under 6.
And yeah, I mean, if you have an older sibling, if you have an older sibling, then they can come too. But it's so, for children under the age.
This just sounds like really a lot of fun. How many years have you been doing this?
This is our third annual.
Year. Great. And the purpose of it is raising money?
We raise money if we have a tuition assistance program and also for special programs like Janice Hurley will be leading dances there. She's known throughout town here. And we have her also come to the center and teach the kids how to dance in the classrooms.
Creative movements and lots of different kind of dance routines.
And then from there, maybe the kids take dance? Because
yeah,
they get interested?
If they wanted to, yeah.
I mean, it may be their first introduction to dance.
Yeah, yeah, some kids have so much fun with Janice that they actually sign up for her class and start doing it when they're older.
Well, that's great. And what do the fish think about all this?
The lights might, they might like the lights, maybe. We turn the lights off and then there's, strobe lights.
Fish tanks everywhere.
Yeah. Fish tanks for all the kids who don't want to dance.
Who knows what's running through those fish's minds. And what will you be doing, Kevin?
This is my second year with these guys. They called me up last year to come play some music for them, and we had a blast. I mean, there were so many kids, so many parents. We had a good time.
It was a good time, yeah.
It really sounds fabulous. So just tell our listeners a little bit about the Gold Creek Child Development Center.
We are located in the Federal Building, and we have been operating since 1994, but as Gold Creek Community Development Center since 1997. We have a board of directors. It's a nonprofit center, so we have a director that runs the center, but then it's overseen by the board, and Shannon and I are on the board. I have been for a few years now. I have graduated one child from the center, and I'm having my second go through now.
I don't have any children there anymore.
But
I
used to.
Yeah.
And you also used to work there.
I also used to work there. I worked there for 6 years. Yeah.
Is that center open for anybody, or is it just federal?
It is open for anybody. We try to maintain at least 50% federal enrollment. We're a little less than that right now, so more than half the people actually are not federal families.
And do you have any openings at this time?
I think we do. I'm not sure what age ranges we have openings for, but we have a website you can check out. I don't know what it is, but if you Google
Gold Creek,
we're
also on Facebook,
and
too.
We're also on Facebook.
Yeah.
So the age ranges are of the center are what?
6 weeks to up to 6 years. So usually when someone goes to kindergarten, they're five and they're getting close to six. Maybe.
And is this like a school for preschool?
We are the only accredited. Am I talking too much?
No, you're fine.
We're the only accredited center, NAEYC accredited in Southeast Alaska, and we do have a curriculum. We have a preschool and a pre-K program, with getting kids developmentally ready for
kindergarten. Yeah.
Great.
It's a really great daycare. I've been really pleased. I've actually been to other daycares with my kids and came back here because nothing I felt compared to the fabulousness of Gold Creek.
How many children and infants are at the center at this time?
There's about 60 kids enrolled right now.
Wow.
From ages 6 weeks to 5 years.
Wow. In four different classrooms.
Yeah.
Oh, I had no idea it was that large.
Yeah.
And this is in the federal building.
Yeah, we're on the ground floor of the federal building.
Yeah.
Okay. We also serve food and have a kitchen with an on-site chef, and so we serve breakfast, lunch, and snacks is included in their tuition.
Which is nice, because then you don't have to remember packing the kids' lunch when you take them to school. So.
Oh, I know it has a great reputation in the community, so that's really great. So, your silent auction is, I assume you're going to have what kind of things?
We have some tickets from Wings. We also have, today we got from Harborview Dental, we got a cleaning and x-rays, and it's a $400 value trip to the dentist for someone who may not have health insurance or dental insurance to go. We got a wash and wax from Wingnut Auto Salon. A $25 gift certificate to McGivney's. It's out in the valley. Great new bar and restaurant.
You should check it out.
Used to be Teal's next to Super Bear. We have Papa Murphy's gift certificates. I'm kind of skipping around my list. Capital Brew over here, the Pump and Brew, Pump and Grind.
Across the street,
in the federal building. They've donated a gift certificate.
Copa
has donated some ice cream. If you guys haven't checked that place out yet, they're making homemade ice cream, so you can bid on a pint of Copa ice cream and go pick it up at your leisure.
Mm-hmm.
How many people do you usually get at this event?
I'd say probably close to 250 to 300.
Whoa.
It is packed.
Yeah, we had it packed last year.
We might have to get a bigger venue if we continue to be so full.
Oh, but the aquarium
is
such a great, so fun.
The aquariums make it so fun. That's why we didn't move it this year, even though it was at capacity last year.
I imagine for some people, maybe it's the first time they've even been to Dyke Park.
Right, right.
And it's been remodeled, so I can't wait to see what it looks like. Dyke Park, it's got remodeled this year.
Oh, they added that front in there. Should be a little bit bigger.
Yeah, we might have more space.
Might be a little bit bigger.
Yeah.
I'm all for more space.
So, Shannon, what's your most fun thing about the event?
Oh, I love the music. I love that the kids actually get to get out. It's cold weather. Not a lot of people get their kids out around this time of year because, you don't want to get them sick or whatever the case may be. You're too busy. And then it's just a place for them to have fun and be as wild as they want to be and then send them home for bed.
Yeah, you cover it. They'll fall asleep in the car.
Yeah.
Okay, great. So my guests have been Shannon Muldoon, Melissa Dumas, and DJ White Chocolate, or Kevin Dean, who is the disc jockey at the Tot Rave. That's this Saturday at DIPAC. It goes from 4:30 to 7:30. It costs $5. And sounds like it's going to be a whole lot of fun.
I think so.
Bring your kids out.
Bring your kids out, yes. Come
disco
have fun.
Disco lights, everything.
Oh, yeah, we have glow sticks that's included in your $5.
Come to the door and get a glow stick.
Ticket price. Everybody gets a glow stick to... make it look like a rave.
Probably their first introduction to a rave.
Yes, right.
It's a very
tender young age. Okay, well, thanks so much for coming in and telling us about that.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much.
You're tuned to a Juno afternoon on KTOO News, and the time is about 19 minutes after 3. And our next guest is Kate Pressing, who's going to talk about the Learning Connection, specifically about computer classes, but about a variety of things. And welcome, Kate.
Thank you, Martha.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. And what is your position? You work for Southeast Regional Resource Center, correct?
Correct. So I work for CIRC, and CIRC has one of the arms that they have is called the Learning Connection. That's kind of more our community-based programs here in Juneau. And so we have a variety of different grants that we have that provide different services to people in the community for different purposes.
Great. And so specifically the computer classes, tell us about those.
Right. Okay, so that's one of the grants that we have, and we offer free computer training to anybody in the community, and it's done in a variety of ways. Each month we offer two classes in the evening, and they'll meet all month long, so they're on cycles. So one meets on a Monday-Wednesday cycle, and so we start with that tonight, actually. So we have an Introduction to Excel class starting tonight. And that's going to run all month long on Monday and Wednesday evenings. And then we also have an Introduction to Computers class. And that's going to meet all month long on Tuesday and Thursday evenings. And they start at 5 o'clock. And it does not require any pre-registration. You can just come to the class. And we have a nice big computer lab that is available for you to use, and we have an instructor, and then, you know, we do kind of a pre-assessment to see where people are at to start off with, and we have a curriculum that we follow, but we can kind of gauge from the particular class if we have to adapt certain things.
What is the location?
The location is downtown. We're at 210 Ferry Way. That's across from the Marine View Apartments or Marine Park, right by the city municipal building there.
And is there a fee for these classes?
These classes are free. These actually, we have a grant from the City and Borough of Juneau. It's a social services grant, and that's how we're able to offer them.
So you assess people's level. Is this individualized?
Well, the classes have kind of a basic curriculum that we're looking to follow when we offer the evening classes. But we do like to assess where people are at, and then the instructor herself, she can kind of individualize certain aspects of it to people, you know, so it kind of varies.
And how many students can sign up?
Well, we can have up to about 17 people in there. We try to accommodate what is, you know, whoever is able to come. And sometimes people aren't able to make it to every single class, but we still try to accommodate that as well. So don't, if you know you have to miss a class, don't let that stop you from coming.
CIRC has been doing this for a long time, correct?
We have.
Do you have any idea how many students have gone through there?
Wow, that's a good question. well, we've done it in different ways over the years, too. We used to have kind of a full-blown vocational training program that was a for-fee program that we don't have any longer, and that we had, you know, at least 1,000 people go through that over time. And then these classes, we're serving, you know, I think on average in a year, we typically serve around 200 people in a year in various classes, specifically for computers. And then overall, the center serves well, you know, like close to 800 a year, I think.
And what are those other learning opportunities?
Well, one more thing about the computer classes is we, in addition to the two evening classes, we have some open labs that we hold, too. So those are a really good time for people that are doing job search, but they're kind of struggling with, you know, how do I fill out these online applications? How do I find these jobs online? And especially if that hasn't been the process that they've used in the past.
Or if they don't have the equipment.
Right, if they don't have access to the equipment, exactly. And then, so during that open lab, I'm in there and I can give them guidance on how to find it, how to word things, you know, how to create resumes, you know, in a Word document, how to use Alexis, you know, how to look at the various different jobs that are out there, that kind of thing. But also that time can be used if they want to, if they've been coming to class at night and they want to practice their skills. Or if I've got some web-based trainings that they can go through. So there's a variety of things that can be going on. So I kind of triage during that time amongst all the different people that are there.
And what is the time for that?
That, we have one on Monday mornings from 9 to 11, each Monday morning, unless it's a holiday. And then every Tuesday morning from 8:30 to 10.
Mm-hmm. And so what are the other things that you teach at the Learning Connection, through the Learning Connection?
Oh, so the Learning Connection has many other things that are going on. We have, we're the testing center for the GED, and we do preparation for the GED there. So we hold different math classes and writing classes and individualized help for helping prepare people for working on their GED. And then we also do the testing there as well. We have different programs that are youth employment programs. We have a WIA youth grant, which is for youth ages 16 to 21. They have to meet certain criteria for that. And the JobX program as well. And that works with up to 24-year-olds, 16 to 24-year-olds for youth. And so in both of those programs, we can help guide youth in career guidance. We can help them build their resumes. We help them look for jobs. There is some funding to place people into what we call work experiences. So people that are looking for, like, first-time jobs or maybe getting, you know, an opportunity to try out something that they've never been able to investigate before because of their level of experience, that kind of thing, that could be a good opportunity for them. We're always looking for employers that might have interest in hosting a youth. In those circumstances, we have some funding in order that are through our grant funds that we pay the wages for the youth, and we act as the employer of record, but we look for host sites to actually provide them with the work opportunity and then to give them the supervision and the opportunity to gain skills.
So much of what is done here, it sounds like it's to prepare people for employment. Is there, just curious, do you follow up on these students? Is there any way to know how successful this is?
We do. There's certain, depending upon the grant that it is and the kinds of funding that's available for follow-up, we'll determine what kind of follow-up is done. And some of it is done by where we received the grant from in the first place. They might be doing follow-up and that kind of thing. We get a lot of students that come back to us, and they like to let us know on a personal level, like, hey, this is what I'm doing, or this is where I've been at. And you know, we constantly run into them around town and things like that.
That must be a real good feeling.
It is. Yeah, my kids kind of... They're always like, Mom, you know everybody.
Well, that's great. I know that you have a great website that has a full schedule of courses. What is the address for that?
Oh, the website for us is www.circ.org/TLC.
Good. So anything else that I didn't cover here?
Well, just a few other things that we have going on. So, you know, I talked a little bit about the GED and about the JobX program, but we also We do the admissions for the Juneau Construction Academy.
Mm.
And the Juneau Construction Academy is a program to introduce people that have an interest in the construction trades to be able to take coursework. And the majority of that coursework is offered through the university, but we help to get them into the program and pay for the class that they take. And that's funded through the Construction Education Foundation. And through that, we give guidance to people on the construction trades and help them look for work in that area also if they have interest. And we've got a recruitment open right now. A lot of the classes are starting next week, and so if anybody were interested, they'd have to get a hold of us ASAP, because there is a process
mm-hmm.
for applying. It just doesn't happen overnight. That's a really another program that we have that's been really successful. And then we also have our English as a Second Language classes and our citizenship classes, and those occur down at the Learning Connection offices as well. Some of our classes are occurring out at the Gruning Park Center. So we have an apartment out there, actually, that we use, and it's used to do tutoring. And that's actually a location where adults can bring their children as well. And, in the morning, there's certain periods of time where, for example, if they're studying for their GED and they have young children, they can come in and bring them with. And there's other types of they have a small computer lab right there. So people, particularly that live in that area, it's real convenient for them to be able to use that center.
So I've been talking with Kate Pressing, and she is telling us about the Learning Connection and about some of the activities that CIRC sponsors. CIRC is a wonderful community resource, and thank you so much for the work that you do with that. So tonight, if someone is interested in learning Excel, they can just walk in.
Yep.
And it's free, and it's at 5 o'clock.
5 o'clock to 7 o'clock tonight.
And then on Tuesday and Thursday, just...
Introduction to computers.
Okay.
Yeah. And then tomorrow morning, I'll have one of the open labs, but those will continue to meet on Mondays and Tuesday mornings. Actually, this Thursday, the Job Center joins us. We partner often with the Job Center, and the Job mm-hmm. Center is going to join us on Thursday morning to put on a workshop on using Alexis. And that'll occur at 10 o'clock Thursday.
Alexis is a computer program. It's not a car.
Yeah, that's a good question. Alexis is the Department of Labor's, it's a database of jobs and a place that you can build your resume on there. So there's a variety of services. You can sign up for workshops through the Job Center using Alexis. It's a good starting spot if you're looking for employment.
Okay. Thanks so much, Kate,
Great.
For coming in. And stay tuned. We'll be back after Writer's Almanac.
The Writer's Almanac for Monday, the 6th of January, 2014. It's the feast of the Epiphany in the Christian Church. Epiphany from an old Greek word meaning manifestation or striking appearance. In ancient Greece, the term was used to refer to occasions when gods and goddesses would manifest themselves to human beings on earth. In the Greek Orthodox Church, the Feast of the Epiphany is a broad celebration of God becoming man. In the Roman Catholic Church, the focus is on the wise men bringing their gifts of frankincense, myrrh, and gold to the infant Jesus, guided from their homeland of Iran by a shining star. The Irish writer James Joyce used that word, epiphany, to mean a sort of inadvertent revelation. He said there were little errors and gestures, straws in the wind, by which people betrayed the very things they were most careful to conceal, a sudden revelation. And in each of his stories in his collection, Dubliners, James Joyce used the device of an epiphany. The last story in the book is set at a party, at the feast of the Epiphany, the story, The Dead. And it's the birthday of E.L. Doctorow, born in New York City, 1931. His mother was a classical pianist. His father owned a music shop on 43rd Street in New York City. E.L. Doctorow went to the Bronx High School of Science, went off to college, studied poetry with John Crow Ransom, worked as an editor after college, and as a scriptreader for Hollywood Studios. His first novel was a parody of a Western, Welcome to Hard Times, 1960, and went on to write his big bestseller, Ragtime, in 1975. And it's the birthday of one of the best-selling poets of all time, Khalil Gibran, born in a mountain village in Lebanon in 1883, lived in Boston, and that was where the publisher Alfred A. Knopf met him, who then published Gibran's book, The Prophet, in 1923. Here's a poem for today by Barbara Crooker, Monopoly, 1955. We start by fanning out the money, colored like Necco wafers, pink, yellow, mint, gold. From the first roll of the dice, differences widen. The royal blues of Boardwalk and Park Place look down their noses at the grapey immigrants from Baltic and Mediterranean avenues. My grandparents, coming from Italy in steerage, measured their gold in olive oil, not banknotes and deeds. The man in the top hat and tuxedo always holds the good cards. The rest of us hope we can pay the electric company. We know there is no such thing as free parking, and bank errors are never in our favor. In the background, Johnny Mathis croons Chances Are from the cracked vinyl radio. We played for hours in those years before television on the Formica table while my mother coaxed a chicken cooking all day on the back burner to multiply itself into many meals. The fat rose to the surface, a roiling ocean of molten gold. Monopoly, 1955, a poem by Barbara Crooker from her collection Gold, published by Cascade Books, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity. Lumosity.com's daily online workouts are designed to improve memory and attention, and are dedicated to helping people feel sharper, think faster, and remember more. More at Lumosity.com. Produced by Joy Biles, assistance from Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Here at Juno Afternoon, and this is KTOO News. And I have on the phone line Heather Beatty, and she is the Pick, Click, Give program director, and she is talking to us from Anchorage. Hi, Heather.
Hi, how are you this afternoon?
I'm good, and thank you so much for joining us. Explain to us the concept of Pick, Click, Give.
Sure thing. Well, Pick, Click, Give is a safe, easy way for Alaskans to make a donation to the nonprofit of their choice when they file online for their PFD. At the end of the online PFD application process, you'll see an opportunity to make a charitable contribution, and you can browse through the list of over 500 nonprofits that are approved to be part of the Pick, Click, Give program, and then you can donate anywhere from $25 up to the full amount of your dividend to one or more nonprofit organizations.
How much?
$25 is the minimum donation.
Oh, okay.
And individuals can choose how much they donate all the way up to the full amount of their dividend.
Okay. And if a person doesn't do it when they apply for their PFD, can they do it later?
That's a great question. Yes, the state of Alaska has made it possible for you to go back into your PFD application and add a donation all the way up through August 31st. So if you filed for your PFD on January 1st, like many early bird Alaskans, but you forgot to picklick give, you can go back to the PFD homepage and you'll see a green button on the right-hand side of the screen that says add or change a picklick give donation.
And does a person get a receipt when they do this?
The state of Alaska will email you a confirmation that shows which organizations you donated to and how much you designated your donation to be.
Okay. So this is the Pick, Click, Give program, quite a unique program because the PFD is unique to Alaska, but it's really a wonderful and ingenious way of encouraging giving to charities in Alaska.
I think it makes giving really accessible. Many Alaskans file for the PFD, and it's a great opportunity to make a contribution, big or small, to the nonprofit that you want to support. We hear a lot of encouraging things from the nonprofits on our list about how many of the PicClick gift donors are interacting with their organization for the first time. So it's a great tool to kind of explore causes that are important to you and show your support when you file for your PFD.
How many years ago was this instituted?
The legislature passed the law authorizing the program in 2008, so Alaskans had the opportunity to pick, click, give for the first time in 2009. So we're entering into our sixth year.
Great. Do you have any idea how much has been given through this program?
Since the program began in 2009, there's been over $7 million donated by Alaskans to nonprofits around the state. It's really fantastic. Alaskans are very generous.
Does it increase every year?
It has been growing each and every year. Last year in 2013, a record was set when more than 26,000 Alaskans donated more than $2.4 million to nonprofits around the state.
Oh, my goodness. So you said that there are over 500 nonprofits listed. Who gets to be listed? What's it take for them to be listed?
Well, the legislature laid out a number of criteria that nonprofits have to meet in order to qualify for the Pick, Click, Give list. A couple of things were the nonprofit has to have been in existence for at least 2 years before they get on PicClick Give list. The legislature also wanted to make sure that these were Alaska-based charities, so a majority of the board members of a nonprofit have to be Alaska residents. These nonprofits apply every year, submitting paperwork and copies of their IRS forms. So they're being vetted each year through this process.
Which is a way of assuring Alaskans that their donation is going to valid and real causes.
Absolutely. And while the list is very large and there's a number of nonprofits that are eligible, we encourage Alaskans to go to picklickgive.org. where you can search through the organizations a number of different ways. You can look at a cause, if there's a particular cause like animal rescue or local arts organizations that you want to take a closer look at, or you can filter it down by the community that you live in. So, for example, in Juneau, there are more than 50 organizations operating in Juneau that are on the Pick, Click, Give list.
Yeah, I've perused that website. It has a lot of information, really nicely laid out, too.
Yeah, each one of the nonprofits on our list has a profile page. So if you see something that looks interesting, you can click and learn a little bit more about what the Pick, Click, Give donations are used for, and see some photos and maybe a video from the nonprofit that helps explain the impact that you have when you give to them through Pick, Click, Give.
Okay, I'm speaking with Heather Beatty. She's Program Director for Pick, Click, Give. Is there anything else you want to add, Heather, that I haven't covered?
Well, I would just say to all of the Alaskans who've never made a donation through Pick, Click, Give that 2014 is a great year to do it. We're expecting the permanent fund dividend checks to be quite a bit bigger this year. And so with all of that extra PFD money, we're hoping that more Alaskans will consider making a difference through Pick, Click, Give.
Okay, great. Well, thanks so much for joining me and telling us us about this really worthwhile program.
Thanks so much for having me. I hope you have a great afternoon.
Okay, thank you. You too.
Bye-bye.
Support comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, offering fresh-roasted coffees for Southeast Alaska since 1974 and dedicated to building healthy and happy lives at home and in coffee-growing communities around the world. Information at heritagecoffee.com.
On Forum at 360, Living the Language, Tlingit speakers and educators David Katzik, Marsha Hotch, Alice Taff, and Lance Twitchell explore what living the language means and why it's important.
If you want to learn French, you can go to France. If you want to learn Spanish, you can go to different countries. If you want to learn Tlingit, you have to manufacture a place where Tlingit really exists.
Thursday at 7 p.m. on KTOO, Friday at 8 p.m. on 360 North, and on demand at 360north.org.
This is Bird Note. Vermont field naturalist and writer Brian Pfeiffer writes today's story. It's an aster in winter, sun through the clouds, a force of nature called the yellow-rumped warbler. Discover this songbird's buttery warmth, even when life outside seems to groan or crunch or crack in the cold. By now, most warblers have migrated south, but the yellow-rumped warbler, which birders affectionately call butterbutt, is a lesson in adaptation. In winter, when most of their kin are enjoying insects in the tropics, yellow rumps are finding food across parts of the West, the southern U.S., and north into New England. With insects in short supply, the yellow rump turns to fruit, juniper, viburnums, and mountain ash. But this warbler's greatest dietary feat is that it also eats the fruits of bayberry and wax myrtle, the raw materials of folksy candles. Digesting wax takes guts, literally. To do so, it appears that yellow rumps possess elevated levels of bile salts, which aid digestion of saturated fats. The yellow rump's gastrointestinal talents probably account for its ability to inhabit a winter range farther north than its relatives. Particularly along the Atlantic coast, birders, in a day, might find butterbutts in the hundreds, abundance unlike any wintering warbler in North America. You can share this show with a friend when you come to birdnote.org.
And you're tuned to KTOO News. This is a Juno afternoon. And my last guests in the studio here with me are here to talk about National Mentoring Month. I have with me Daniel Shetke. I just butchered that one. Shetke.
Now you got it.
And Gretchen Durking. Mm-hmm. And Daniel is a big brother, and yep. He's going to tell us a little bit about his experience, and Gretchen Durking is a Big Brother Big Sister staff person here in Juneau. Let me ask you, Gretchen, what is National Mentoring Month, and what is it for?
Yeah, so it's just a time where we're really trying to highlight and thank our mentors for everyone, and as you know, Big Brothers Big Sisters has bigs and littles and mentors, and so throughout the month we have different activities to kind of thank those mentors for all the work they put into it. So we have things like a pancake breakfast where littles will be baking pancakes for their bigs, and this last Friday we had screen-printed photographs up that the Jack that matches did together, and just little things like that to kind of thank our mentors for helping the youth in Juneau.
I know that Big Brothers and Big Sisters is really all about mentoring. Are there other programs in town that do mentoring?
I'm not familiar with the other ones. I know maybe
Zach Gordon, I think,
yeah,
is
Josh
there
Zach
something
Gordon.
There. So how many mentors do you have at the Johnson Youth Center?
Well, we actually only have one current mentor right now, and he's here with us today. So we really want to highlight him.
We've got 100% of the men are right here in the studio.
Future, we will have some in the future, hopefully, but we really want, that's why Daniel's here, to kind of highlight what he does and encourage others to do it too.
What are the ages of the youth at the Johnson Youth Center?
I believe, well, it can be 14, I think, through 21, but we can, Daniel might even be able to.
I think that's about right.
About right, yeah. And so there are older youth that rarely get visitors at the center. Some of them rarely get visitors at the center, and those ones are really interested in having mentors because maybe they came from out of town, and so their family can't see them. So it's really nice to match them up with junior community members so they get somebody to talk to and hang out with.
So what has been your experience, Daniel, with this mentoring?
It's been interesting. it takes a while for them to process things and get it to the point where you can actually take them out of the complex and go do stuff. I actually just got my first pass with him last week. So, and I've been doing it now for, I want to say, about 6 months.
Are you matched with one?
Yeah.
Youth?
One youth down, mm-hmm. One youth in there. And, so you see him once a week, and you wonder if it's really having any effect. You're like, you don't know exactly what's going on. But about a couple months in, his primary care physician, each one has someone who's, tracking their, treatment and getting them through it all. And he sat me down one day and just talked to me. And but he said, it was actually, making a difference, that somehow, my little was actually doing better and was actually choosing to start doing better and start making progress through moving up in the ranks, as it were, within JYC, and thus getting more freedom and more privileges. And and that seemed to mostly start after I started mentoring. So that was really encouraging.
Well, that's rewarding to hear that.
Yeah. So, but.
What do you do, for a living?
What do I do for a living? Right now, I work as a warehouse manager for some gift shops downtown, mm-hmm. So I haul their trinkets.
What made you decide to do this?
That's a good question. A while ago, we were looking into some friends and I were looking into some social justice issues, and especially sex trafficking and stuff, and we were just asking questions, talking to people, and we were talking to one of our Alaska senators, and he was just talking about how one of the biggest things that can be done against things like that and against people backsliding is just to be friends to youth who are in a bad place and who don't have solid support around them, and so they seem big brothers, big sisters, mentoring someone, and then especially in JYC would be a good thing. And if nothing else, would just give them someone who, someone who cares and someone who's there for them. So,
I've heard that a lot, that for a troubled youth, sometimes the most important thing to turn them around is one adult that they can trust or that they can connect with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's great. So, Gretchen, you said that Daniel is the only mentor. Is he the first, or have there been others? Has this been going on a while?
This has been going on a while, yeah. So it's, unfortunately, we don't have tons and tons of volunteers for the JYC program, Johnson mm-hmm. Youth Center, so that's why we're really, really hoping that Daniel can help encourage people and we can get the word out there. Because there's definitely always youth at the center that could really use someone.
What's required of a mentor, and how would they get started signing up to be one?
Yeah, so first thing, if they're interested, just call us, 586-3350.
586-3350,
yes.
Okay.
And then just kind of the requirements, each week go to the facility 1 hour a week, hang out and talk with the youth.
And this male or female?
This is male, so yeah, all male volunteers, hopefully.
Male mentors and male youth.
Well, you have to be over, I think it's over 18. How old are you?
I'm
25.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
There's definitely an age requirement, but yeah, we just male volunteers and one hour a week, and then eventually we hope that that relationship will go out into the community after the youth is released. So like a lot of kids with the facility will get passes at a certain point, and then like Daniel will go out and do things.
What kind of things do you do with your youth person?
Well, like I said, this was the first time I got to take him out, so it's mostly been sitting at the facility talking and playing cards, because there's not a lot to do there, and
yeah.
You can't necessarily bring stuff in, so.
But you did get to take him out once. And
yes,
where did,
recently.
Where
took,
did you
took
go?
Him out to see a movie, the new Hobbit movie. He was really excited to see that. So,
oh, that's nice.
Yeah. It was nice, and he was really excited about it. He's like, yes, I get out. So.
How long have you been working with this person?
Like I said, I think about 6 months at mm-hmm. least, I think. So something along those lines.
But you have many more young people that could use a mentor.
Definitely, yeah. So again, if you are interested, you can call us. We also have orientations
mm-hmm.
That we've started up. So if you're not sure if you're interested and you just want to come hear about the different programs, every twice a month we do an orientation. So you can also contact us and we'll let you know.
And is there a matching process? And how do they select a young person?
Well, we try to match people up. So sometimes the process takes a little bit just because we really put a lot of care into matching people. So we want to make sure that you have some things in common with your little or with your big. And so we'll look at your interests and, you know, what's convenient location-wise and kind of make the match based on that. So if you, you know, if it's taking a while, it's just for those reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Want to make the perfect match.
So for the ones that you've had in the past, do you have some success stories about them?
Ooh, success stories. I mean, I guess because I'm fairly new at this,
my
success
mm-hmm.
story is with Daniel.
Yeah.
Sounds like his, well, after
yeah.
speaking, because I communicate with both the big brothers and the little brothers and try to see how things are going. And just after hearing his little brother talk about his experience with Daniel and really excited about it, and just it was awesome, and I really wanted Daniel to come on and tell other people about it and hope that other people can get interested as well.
The big brothers and big sisters here in Juneau have quite a few participants, that's correct?
Well, we have about, I think it's like 250 community-based matches, and then
mm-hmm.
like around 20 school-based. Those are very rough numbers, but we're still, like right now, we have 40 little brothers waiting, and so we're always in need of big brothers and big sisters, but as you can see, the wait list for little brothers is a lot longer, and some of those kids are waiting for a couple years to be matched, so.
What brought you into this area of work?
Well, I'm a school and site-based coordinator, so I get to go around town and kind of facilitate the programs at different areas, and I really thought that would be a fun opportunity to get to know Juneau. I was born and raised here, so just get to know it better and help our youth.
mm-hmm. Are you a volunteer or a paid staff member?
No, I'm a paid staff member.
And how many paid staff members does?
I believe there's 6 right now.
Oh.
I can off the top of my head, yes, 6.
That's great. Well, Big Brothers and Big Sisters really is such a worthwhile endeavor, and you're here to talk about or to encourage people to sign up to be a Big Brother at the Johnson Youth Center.
Yeah.
And so we'll hope that there's somebody out there who would be interested in doing that, and the number again is?
586-3350.
Okay, and they would talk to you, I assume?
Yeah, or anyone at the office. If they call us, we'll direct them to the right person.
Okay, great. So I've been speaking with Daniel Schutke and Gretchen Durking, and there have been speaking to us about the Big Brothers Big Sisters program at the Johnson Youth Center, which is very small at this point, but is hoping to grow. And I assume, is Daniel, it's a rewarding experience for you.
Yeah, it has been.
That's good. You get something out of it as well.
Yeah, it's good to see him and listen to him, and you know, just give him someone to be friends with, because none of the staff can interact with him in that way, just because they have to be the authority figures. So it's, and then especially for him, he's from another city, so he doesn't, like she was saying earlier, he's one of the ones that doesn't have anybody, you know, to come in on, you know, visiting nights or whatever, you know, so it doesn't have any family in town, so it's good.
Okay, well, thanks for doing that, because that's very important, and thank you too, Gretchen, for your work, and thanks both of you for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's it for today's Juno Afternoon. Thanks for joining me, and thanks to all the guests today and to Jeff Brown, our producer. To listen to any of today's interviews or any other Juno Afternoon program, visit the KTOO.org website under Local Programs and Juno Afternoon. Please join us tomorrow at 3 p.m. for Juno Afternoon. Our host will be Pat Moore, and Pat will be talking with ASME's Tyson Fick about the upcoming photo contest. Marion Call will be here with a preview of Wednesday's KRNN Spotlight Concert at the Gold Town Theater. We'll talk with Scott Foster about his Thursday Audubon presentation on kayaking in Southeast Alaska. That plus Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more. That's tomorrow at 3 on KTOO News. And the weather for today is areas of fog, rain mixed with snow. And tomorrow is rain, and Wednesday is rain, and Thursday and Friday rain likely. The highs, the high today is 38, and the low for tonight is 34. This is KTOO Juno. We rebroadcast on translators K276 AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269 AO and Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K2T201 AM in Gustavus, K220 BT in Hoonah, and K210 AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI cable on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org.
Because the wind chills around here are still going to be about minus 30 to minus 40, we're still going to ask some businesses to either not open tomorrow or limit it to volunteer workers.
The historic cold snap in the Midwest and much of the rest of the country.
It's Monday, January 6th, and this is All Things Considered from NPR News.
I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Audie Cornish. Coming up, we'll hear about the frigid temperatures and the phenomenon behind the cold, the polar vortex.
This winter, it's come unusually far south, bringing record low temperatures and wind chills.
So it's actually warmer in parts of Alaska than it is in much of the upper Midwest.
Also, one consequence of hard times in Portugal, a declining birth rate.
We had more than 40 deliveries in one day, and now we have 10 deliveries in one day.
And our book critic reviews famous writers I have known.
First, this hour's news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Jack Spear. Janet Yellen was confirmed by the Senate today to be the first woman to head the Federal Reserve. As NPR's John Itzde explains, Yellen gained bipartisan support.
The vote to confirm Yellen was 56 to 26, with 11 Republicans joining all the Democrats present to support her.